This is Authors Alcove, where writers learn from writers. Readers get the inside scoop, and everyone learns something. An episode comes out every Wednesday where writers share their latest work, every other Tuesday where us writers get taught by such experts as editors, book cover artists, and marketing execs, and beyond. So grab a cup of coffee, and let's dive into our next book. Welcome to Authors Alcove. I am your host, Agnes Wolf. Today I have editor and author Susan Ferber. She published her first book, The Essence of an Hour, in 2021. And on my birthday, actually, May 25th, 2023, she published its sequel, We Were Very Merry. They both are historical fiction. So I invited her today to talk about writing in the historical fiction genre, about setting, researching, publishing, and what she has learned as an editor. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me today.
So first, I'd love you to share a little bit about yourself and what has brought you into the writing world, maybe even a little bit of your inspiration behind this particular series.
Yes, I'm originally from America. I'm from upstate New York, and I've now lived in the UK, in Oxford and London, for 11 years. And I've always wanted to be a writer. Since I was a very little girl, reading things like Little Women and Anne of Green Gables, I took such inspiration from Anne Shirley and Joan March and how they too wanted to be writers and how they were also readers. So I took to heart all the books that they loved too. And I started to try to locate my own voice in literature and what I was passionate about and what maybe I could write about. And both Joe and Anne learn in both of these books that you need to write what you know. And they try to write these great romances, and then they find writing about the people and the characters in their own lives and their own stories, that's the greatest inspiration for them. So for me, I've also learned that in a way, but then I also write historical fiction. And I think historical fiction is a bit like how people speak about writing sci-fi, in that if you locate it in what you do know, then the fantastical element of it, or the historical element of it in this instance, that comes a little bit more naturally, and then both can flow into each other.
Is it a different setting for the first book and the second book?
They follow on from each other, so not really too different of a setting. The first book is set in the early 1940s, specifically in the summer of 1941 into early 1942, but it is told through retrospect. So our heroine in the first one is basically telling the story from the early 50s, about 10 years later on, looking back. And then the second novel follows on for that 10-year gap between the events at the end of the first novel to how does she come to write that novel in the early 1950s. So it goes to the later 1940s into the 1950s as women's roles were starting to change and The Second Sex was published.
So how does the setting influence the character's choices and how the reader may perceive her?
So that's something I definitely kept in mind while writing both books, because for me, historical fiction really fails when it is somebody from a modern setting really just positioned in a different period, and that their thought process, the way they process the world is through a modern lens and context, because things have changed vastly since the 1940s, 1950s, and with particular regards to women's rights and women's choices. So where she is in this novel, our heroine, Lily Kerrigan, at the beginning, she's in a rather conservative American upbringing, very Catholic upbringing, and she has very limited choices. She has very limited role models for what women can become. She's 18 at the beginning of the first novel, and she's about to go to university to study, and she's hoping that will allow her to be more open and to learn more about the world, but she still understands that her options are limited, and that she probably will have to be married by a certain age and have children, and that she cannot have as many options as the young men in her life. And then she's in parallel with a few other women in the story too, and we see how their choices and what they want to do are in conflict with her own desires. So I think it's such an interesting period, the 1940s into the 1950s, because this is a time when young women were starting to receive an education that was becoming maybe not common, but at least not completely rare. But still, this is the era of Betty Draper, of Betty Friedan, where they can go to university, they can receive an education, but then by 22, they're expected to be married and in the home and not to have careers of their own. I just kept thinking about what would that feel like and how did that relate to my own childhood and growing up, and how have things changed and how have things not changed?
So what type of research did you have to do to keep it true to that particular era?
So a lot of the research I did was to read books from this era, and particularly women authors who were writing between usually the 1930s to the 1960s, both in America and in England as well, and in France a little bit too, to understand chiefly the vocabulary that they would use. How would they frame a sentence, or how would they see the world, as I said, too modern, but also what is too old-fashioned? I think we have a certain idea of women living in the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, that they never spoke about sex. They certainly didn't have that before they were married, that they weren't necessarily interested in careers or different things like that. So how then you read books from this period and it feels so incredibly modern in some ways and then very dated in other ways. So taking all of that in was the way I really researched and tried to find this heroine's voice. Probably some of the best books for that have been Mary McCarthy's The Group, which was published in the early 60s, but was about her experience at Vassar in the 1930s into the 1940s, about a group of young women who graduate. And again, they have this amazing education, but what are they going to do with it? How are they going to take on the world? And there's a lot of detail in that book that was so influential for writing this and also saying, yes, this is historically accurate. Again, with both of these books, what I wanted to do with them is a little bit different than sometimes what we find in historical fiction, where you'll find a detail and it'll be like explaining the historical significance of this detail or this artifact or something like that. What I wanted with these books is for them to feel contemporary in the sense that they could have been published in the 1940s or 1950s. So I wanted, when she's referencing things, for it not to feel like, oh, historical reference, but a reference in the same way a contemporary novel today might reference a current event. That same sort of shorthand you would have for those things is what I wanted to capture here.
I love that you brought up the voice, because I actually was reading some of your other interviews for The Essence of an Hour, and yes, you talked about how you paid a special attention to the voice you gave your character. So before we go completely into that, do you mind describing her personality and how that affects the way she interacts during this time frame?
Yes. So Lily is, as I said, 18 years old. She is intensely literary. It is always a joy to write a character who is literary, because it means they understand the art of narration and how to be an unreliable narrator. So part of Lily's personality is she will tell us that she is unreliable, that she is flawed as a narrator. But yet I think that allows us then to almost be more deceived by her. And she's a very controlling person. She's also somebody who's gone through a great deal of trauma for somebody who is so young. And so she doesn't know how to process what has happened to her. And she looks outward, and oftentimes she hurts particularly female friends in her own quest for self-validation or self-realization.
What type of growth did she have from the first book to the second book?
I think at the end of the first book, she is still very limited in the way she sees the world. She cannot quite understand other people's points of view. And by the end of the second book, I think she has grown up a great deal more, that she's able to now say that there are other people in the world beside myself, which sounds like such a minor thing, but I think lots of us struggle with that. And I think, again, a character such as Lily, who is so insular, who both by her own admission to being insular, but also her circumstances. She's from a very small town where there's not people who think like she does. She then goes to live in Europe, and she lives in France for a time, and she doesn't speak very great French. She's always very isolated in circumstance as well as in terms of her own mental abilities. And I think she starts to realize that she needs to reflect that inward and stop hurting people as a consequence of this. I think she's still learning, though. I don't think she's fully grown up. I don't think she's capable of ever perhaps fully coming into realization.
So what would you say her greatest strength is?
Oh gosh, I think she loves people. I think she does love. She loves intensely. I just think once she does not love you anymore, she's been hurt by you, she can shut down and become quite volatile as a character.
So shifting gears, just talking about the publishing aspect, did you self-publish or traditional?
Traditional.
What was that experience like for you?
It was great. I mean, it's quite interesting because I also work as an editor, so I understand a little bit of the publishing world because of that. And this book, while it is traditional, it's through a very small little press in the UK called Valley Press, which is based up north. So it's not the huge, lavish marketing spend that you sometimes see on debut novels. But again, working in publishing, I knew how rare that can be and how you have to do lots of self-promotion as an author and how it's not necessarily an overnight success, that you have to keep working at it and you have to keep working with each subsequent novel to build presence and to continue to build your voice as well.
So how do you build your presence?
By doing things like this, by being involved on Instagram. I try to do LinkedIn, but that's more of a professional thing. Again, I'm not brilliant at it. And also, I love doing in-person events, and it's been fantastic post-COVID to be able to go back into bookstores and to connect with readers, both on this side of the pond and in America as well.
So what was the most challenging part from the first word to the first purchased book?
Gosh. Okay. So I wrote the first draft of the first book when I was 19 and I had been sent home from university on a short sick leave. I had mono. And while I was recovering, I thought it'd be a great idea to start writing a novel. As I said, I've always wanted to be a writer. I've always been entranced by the written word. And I had written a few attempts at a novel earlier in my teens as well. But this felt very different. And that's because I was reading things like Joyce's Portrait of the Artist's Young Man and Edna O'Brien's The Country Girls. And these are probably some of the biggest influences into that first draft of The Essence of an Hour. So I wrote the first draft of that in a little over a month. It just kind of came out of me. This idea of a relationship between two female friends growing up and how they're codependent on each other and the toxicity of that. This was a story that, as I said, it just flowed. It was terrible, though. And one of the chief reasons it was so terrible is because I was 19 and I was attempting to write the voice of a 28-year-old woman looking back at when she's 19. Because again, lots of the books that I love, which are Bildungsromans, have that feature of looking back several years. Now, something like Catcher in the Rye, I believe he only looks back 2 years. Maybe I should have attempted something like that when I was 19. It's a very similar voice then. But with a character like Lily, I had to keep balancing the voice when she's 28 versus the voice when she's 18. And our voices change tremendously. The vocabulary we use, I think, between being late teenagers to even still very young 20-year-olds, it's not as immediate. It's not as passionate. There's not as many hyperboles, if you will. But that was all in there in that first draft. So it took many years of revisiting it and building on it again and again and again until I was 26. And I thought, this book is just terrible. There's no amount of editing that is going to make it any good. And that's when I just rewrote it from scratch. And I did go back and I did keep looking at the first draft when I get stuck, or I would go back to my teenage diaries and again, try to recapture that voice that I had lost now that is there in the first draft, but was starting not to be there in the newer version. And combining both the more mid-20s voice with that 18-year-old voice to make what becomes the first book. Then it took about 2 years of editing and querying agents and publishers after that for it to be accepted for publication. And then finally it was published in 2021 when I just turned 29. So it took about 10 years from first word to publication.
I find that's very common for a lot of people, is that they start one and then they pretty much do an entire rewrite of their first one because they realize with life experience that there's so much you learn and so much you would change because you just don't know the world like you think you do when you're 18.
Yeah. Yes, completely. But also I think there's something really quite magical about the confidence of the voice you have at 18 that is lost. And sometimes I find reading books when they try to capture teenage voices, the voice sounds way too old or way too knowledgeable. So that almost brattiness that comes with being an 18-year-old, I was glad to still have that in some form come through in this.
So how did your experience as an editor help you with the writing process?
I believe I've now written and published 2 novels. I'm working on a 3rd novel, and I've learned myself as a writer at this point. I write a first draft incredibly quickly. Otherwise, I get the fear and I think I can never do it. So, but as an editor, I believe intensely in editing. So for me, real writing comes through the editorial process and constantly rewriting. I, as I'm sure many of the authors I've worked with over the years will say, I'm very, very particular and I'm very harsh in my criticisms, constructive criticisms of work. They have no idea how harsh that is then reflected inwardly when I'm working on my own manuscript. And especially when I get to the later drafts of working on a novel, I try not to see it as my own work then. I try to actually just view it in the same way I would view anyone else's work as an editor and have that really critical eye about it. And flow and style probably are the things that I am most concerned with as a writer. And probably that comes from the training as an editor as well, to really hone in on that voice.
What was your biggest asset as having that editing experience? What do you feel you were able to bring to a book that other authors might struggle with?
That's a great question. So I think in general, again, it's just that ability for me to look at my work so coldly and so removed at times, and to cut ruthlessly. And I really like, at least the books that I write, I love reading books which are very overblown and very big. But for my own work, I like it to be as concise and tight as possible. And I think that comes from being trained as an editor, and even working sometimes on more professional, really kind of quite dull publications. I've also had just, again, that really line editing level of attention, which I bring to everything I write. As an author as well, at least I hope my editors that I've worked with at Valley Press would say this, but it also taught me to not take things personally. It's very, very difficult. I did still take things very personally, don't get me wrong. But when you have that constructive feedback to say, no, I'm not going to be hurt by this, I'm going to be challenged by this, and I know why in my mind that works, but it doesn't necessarily work for the editor and it doesn't work for the reader. Equally, one to say, no, I'm going to stick to my guns, but to feel quite confident in that as well. So I think it helps me to navigate both sides of the relationship.
So I noticed that on your website, you had mentioned that you actually help others. You're a consultant for self-publishing through Ingrams Marks and Amazon KDP.
Yes.
How is that different than traditional publishing?
So it is quite different. I mean, probably the best thing about self-publishing, if you use print-on-demand services, as KDP usually does, or Ingrams Spark, if you have a typo, you can change it tomorrow. And the next copies that go out, they're fresh, they're new. I work with a lot of thought leadership business book writers. And again, their thinking might evolve. So again, you can change that really quickly and you can make essentially a new edition at the drop of a hat. So that I find quite interesting about self-publishing. Also, they're just different routes and they depend on what you feel comfortable with. I think people do have to understand, even in traditional publishing, it's what I said earlier, there still is a lot of self-promotion. There's still a lot of author involvement. Not everything is magically taken care of by your publisher. That's just not the publishing world and landscape we live in anymore. So you still are doing a lot of work. That wouldn't be the reason I would say people shouldn't go into self-publishing. I think lots of times people say, oh, don't do self-publishing if you're not willing to put in the effort. I think if you want to be an author or a creative full stop in this landscape, you have to be willing to put in some effort in self-promotion and engaging your platforms and whatnot. But again, what else is different when you're doing self-publishing? It also is a cost. So there's costs involved too. So you need to think about, if you're going to hire a designer, you have to pay for an editor. How much editorial work do you really need? I always say, probably you need more editorial work than you think you need. Lots of clients have come to me previously and they want a light proofread, because that's what we think about editing. We think about finding comma splices and typos, but really a full editorial process goes through so many different stages. And sometimes others will say to me, oh, do it all at once. And again, that seems cost effective, but it's just simply not possible. I'm really sorry. It's not possible. You have to do multiple stages, usually a structural edit, then a line edit, copy edit, and then a proofread, that final polish. And sometimes even you have multiple stages of everything I've just described. So if you are looking into getting into self-publishing, you need to be realistic about how many people you need to help you publish. Again, some people need fewer people. They have design skills themselves, or they have an editorial background themselves. They can comfortably work with that. But I think no person is a full publishing sort of venture on their own. So that you do need to engage outside readership, outside editors, and probably a designer, maybe even a typesetter. So be really realistic going into it. Though you do sometimes get higher royalty rates. And I talk through my clients about this. And again, for some people, it really, really works. They love the autonomy of it. But for other people, I think the independent nature of it, the lack of support system that comes from being your own publisher, that I would recommend people think very seriously about.
That's really good advice. I think more and more people are doing self-publishing because they think it's going to be easier than going traditional. But back to just the writing in general, what books or authors do you feel shape the way that you write?
Oh, my favorite question. So I've mentioned a few, but I think in particular, for both books, Ernest Hemingway changed. I mean, it's such a cliche, but it's true. I read Hemingway for the first time when I was 19, and just there is a difference in his style that had not really been done before in American writing. And that was what triggered me to really scale back my writing. Prior to that, I had loved Ian Forster and Jane Austen and Thomas Hardy. And so everything I was writing was really bad purple prose. But that, again, that attention to every word counts and dialogue is what I've learned mostly from Hemingway. Though I think in both books, there's more attention to his friend and later enemy, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and the beauty of his language and his dedication to memory and to nostalgia and to really striving to make a sentence as packed with poignancy as possible, and sometimes really failing and going back to that purple prose scale of writing, and other times soaring in its complexity and its beauty. So those are two writers that I read again and again, trying to figure out how they did it and sometimes how they couldn't do it, that these are really talented writers that still fail. And I think that's important for writers to recognize as well, is how it's not a given. It's not magic. It's not sheer talent. It is dedication and it is work. But other favorite writers of mine, as I said, Mary McCarthy is a huge influence in terms of, she's writing about subject matter, not just the group, but the company she keeps and a few of her other short stories and memoirs as well. Really important contextually for me. And again, even rereading The Group this summer, I hadn't realized especially in the first book, how influenced I had been by her way she situates women in dialogue with each other, and how they don't just talk about men and these, you know, the cliche or whatnot, but how they're constantly talking about themselves and their own desires has been a huge influence on me.
I just want to thank you so much for sharing your wisdom about the publishing. You really brought a lot that I hadn't thought about as far as traditional and self-publishing. But I'd love to ask this question. This is the question I ask everybody. It is, what is one piece of advice you would give to a not yet published author?
Don't give up. I mean, I'm sure most people say something similar to that, but I think it is being realistic and not giving up. So even if you have to give up a certain manuscript or a certain idea, why? And think about that and think about where you'll go next in your development as a writer. Do you have a better story to tell? Or if you are feeling like you're hitting a dead end on that idea, and I felt like that on the first novel so many times, and the rejections that you have from agents and from publishers, it can feel very unpersonal, but then incredibly personal at the same time. And you think, maybe it's just a bad idea and I do need to move on. But I kept going back to that story and I kept thinking, no, I haven't read anything quite like it. And there are some bits in it that I find that I think are very moving and I think deserve to be told to a wider audience. I believe in it. I believe in these passages. Don't believe in the rest of the passages. So I need to fix that bit, but I believe in this, and just concentrating on what you believe in and not giving up. But if you do need to move on, then think, right, what can I sort of mine from that first work or those first few works and take forward into your next writing project and hopefully success.
It's funny you said that almost everybody says never give up, but it's funny because everybody who says never give up, they follow it with something totally different, totally unique, and they all have their own spin on it. And I just love hearing it. Thank you very much. And thank you so much for just giving me some of your time to just share about your book and also some of your wisdom as well. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. It's always a delight.
Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of Authors Alcove. We will be back next week on Wednesday, where we will have a writer share yet another piece of work. Also, every other Tuesday, we do learn from experts such as editors, marketing execs, book cover artists, illustrators, and more. If you are interested in being a guest on our show, feel free to go to authorsalcove.com, go to the podcast tab, and then click on Be a Guest. If you're looking for a healed heart, hop on over to our sister podcast, Strength, Love, and Healing with Authors Alcove. You can find that on Spotify and the Apple Podcast. Thank you so much for listening today. Have a great day.